Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Two narratives to divide America and the role of identity. I have no idea what I just said. I have no idea, a little bit of an idea what we're going to talk about, and that's the division of America. But more than that, I have no idea what we are going to be talking about this early rainy morning here in Israel. My guest is Professor Francisco Gil White. He knows what he wants to talk about. I'm just going to go along for the ride. But you know that whenever we butt heads together, it's always an exhilarating show, something that is of a mental exercise. He is brilliant, and I want to hear what he has to say about this, because we do see America being divided so sadly, such a great country, and seeing the intolerance of one side to another side is just extremely sad. And we'll be talking about this in the show. I want to emphasize again to all of our listeners that Israel News Talk Radio, I don't like doing this. It's embarrassing for me, but we really do need your support. We are a station run by mostly volunteers, and we give our news out for free to radio stations around the world. If you have a radio station that wants to carry our news, let us know, or a podcast, or even just a show host someplace that wants our 5-minute news, we'll be happy to give that out to you. Just let us know. We are here in order to bring voices of Israel to the world. Accurate voices, by the way. Accurate news using accurate terms, not necessarily what's politically correct. And we do it not out of spite or anything except for wanting to be accurate and not erase history, and to remind people what is the truth and what is just political correctness. So go to our webpage at israelnewstalkradio.com. And on our homepage there, you will see our donate button, and you'll also see our wall of fame. If you donate to Israel News Talk Radio, you will join the other listeners on our wall of fame. Check it out, but go to the donate button, and please help support the station. Partner with us to bring voices to the world from Israel, from the Holy Land. We'll be right back.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel? Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Two narratives to divide America and the role of identity. Again, I'm not sure exactly what we're going to be speaking about, but my guest does, and that is Professor Francisco Gil White. He's a political anthropologist and professor at Etam University in Mexico City. He's also known for his extensive research, which examines what's driving world politics, movements, and agendas. And you can check out his website at hearhome.com. That's H-I-R for Historical and Investigative Research, H-I-R-home.com. Welcome to the show, Professor Francisco Gil White.
Thanks for having me, Tamar. It's always a pleasure to be here.
It is always a pleasure to spar with you on the air. It's such an intellectual exercise every time I have you on. Two narratives to divide America. We see today America divided like I have not seen or remembered even learning since perhaps the Civil War. And in fact, just now before the show before I got you on, Fox News was talking about some people speaking about the option of civil war. We're seeing hot tempers in America. One side feels that the election was stolen from it. The other side feels that Trump is Hitler, and they have to silence not just him, but his movement and everybody in his movement. And we're seeing terrible things going on with banning people, censoring people, censoring platforms where people want to go to talk because they can't talk in the mainstream platforms. So what do you see happening?
Well, so what I'd like to talk about first, before we talk about the surface events of American politics in the last year, and especially in the last few days, I'd like to talk about the way identity organizes culture, because that was the topic of my PhD research, and it's something I've been working on ever since. And I think it's useful to have that in the background when you're trying to interpret what's going on right now. So if I may, I'd like to take a few minutes to explain what that research was about.
Please.
So I was trying to understand the reason I became an anthropologist is that I wanted to understand what is it about human cognitive design, about the design of our brains, that makes us so susceptible to racist ideas. Because racist ideas are very popular the world over. In other words, political entrepreneurs who sell racism have an easy job of it because our brains seem have a taste for these kinds of ideas. And I wanted to understand why. So I did some research and I developed a theory that has to do with the kinds of contexts in which our brain evolved. And what that theory says is that the way to understand it is try to imagine what the conditions were for the emergence of what we call ethnicity, right? Because that's one of the most salient identities. Now we have all different kinds of identities, but in the ancestral world, you wouldn't have had that many because it was much less complex. But what was happening in the ancestral world is that you had these bands of hunter-gatherers, right? Moving around the landscape, hunting and gathering and so forth. And every once in a while, you would have to make decisions about very important interactions with members outside of your band, because those decisions involve marriage, because you don't want to marry your children off to people inside your band, right? Because that leads to inbreeding depression and you get birth defects and so forth. So traditions developed about marrying your children off to people in some other band, but you also don't want the people you also don't want your in-laws to be people that are too different from you, because humans are a highly cooperative species. So and the in-laws in subsistence level economies, right, when people are scraping to get by, which is how hunter-gatherers live, in those kinds of societies, your in-laws are very important allies, because you are bound together by the glue that is the common interest that you all have in the common grandchildren, right? So you know that in times of need, you can call on your in-laws, and times of need will come around, that's for sure. You know, there will be famine sooner or later, or war, and you want to be able to have these allies to count on. So you don't want to choose people to be your in-laws with whom you have a lot of trouble communicating, or who think that the rules of the game for social interactions are very different from what you think they are, because that will create all kinds of coordination problems, as game theorists call them, you won't be able to function. They won't be able to function as allies as efficiently as you would like them to, right? So what people started to do was make decisions about marriage that, they would marry their children off to members of bands that seem to have a very similar culture to their own. And as, you know, they started exchanging wives among these culturally similar groups, you know, heads are being exchanged. Heads are traveling to and fro between these groups that are already relatively similar to each other. Well, as time goes by, they become even more similar. And then a kind of a cultural boundary starts to form where, you know, people are marrying within this larger boundary, but not without, right? So they're marrying within the circle of groups that are relatively similar to each other. They're becoming more and more similar. And rules about not marrying outside of that larger group start to develop. People start labeling each other, you know, we are the X's outside, you know, the Y's, the Z's, other groups. And the reason, what these categories, these labeled categories, start organizing is interactional culture, right? Normative culture, and belief systems, and all this stuff. So that pretty soon, as time goes by and these things become more stable, you've got these collections of intermarrying groups that are traveling in different directions in cultural evolution. In other words, precisely because they are not intermarrying, right? People are marrying within these labeled frontiers, and therefore they're not interacting very much outside of them. These labeled ethnic groups, we can now call them that, would start traveling in time along different cultural paths, right? So they would be accumulating more and more cultural differences. More and more differences in terms of the rules of what to eat or what is taboo, what's funny, what's shameful, how to make a promise, how to make a contract, what's disrespectful, all sorts of different rules for how to relate to another human being. Okay, now, what's very important now, once you get this picture of how ethnic groups are arising and how these ethnic identities are organizing particular ways of being a human being, is that inside each one of these ethnic groups, people are being taught, aren't they, that the way to the norms of their own society are the correct way to be. You see, because when you're growing up, your parents are socializing you to perform correctly the norms of your particular society, right? So certain ways of behaving and certain ways of talking, certain ways of relating to other people are correct and others are incorrect. And the ones that are correct, well, those happen to be the ones that your group agrees on, right? So you develop this habit of thinking of your way of being as the correct way of being, as the good way of being. And this is a sort of an inevitable consequence of the socialization process. But what it also does is that when you look outside of the group and you see how members of other ethnic groups behave, the way they seem to behave, well, that is by definition wrong. I mean, they're violating all of your norms. Of course, they're not violating your norms. They're abiding by their own, but their own norms happen to be different. So to you, they seem wrong. So it is a very small step from this socialization process to casting aspersions on the way other people behave, the out-group ethnics behave in ways that you come to judge as incorrect or bad and so forth. And what is very interesting here is the signaling process, because in order to establish that you are a properly socialized member of your own ethnic group, you will signal that by abiding by the norms, right? By producing the correct, quote-unquote, behaviors. But also by expressing certain ideas that are associated with the worldview of your society. So if you express those ideas, people will be like, oh yeah, he's a properly socialized member of our group, and if you don't, then you're not. Once you move out of the realm of ethnicity, where things are relatively clear because people are not intermarrying and they're not really interacting very much with each other, especially not in the ancestral.
Okay, hang on, hang on. We have to go to a break. We'll be right back, everybody.
Okay. Sure.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Two narratives to divide America. That's what we're talking about today on the show, and we're getting a anthropological lesson now, right now, from our guest, Professor Francisco Gil White. He's talking about how clans form and their loyalties and their beliefs, and take it from there.
All right. So this complex where you have these cultural boundaries with labeled, with these ethnic labels that organize all this normative culture, and people tend not to marry outside. And they, because of the internal process of socialization, they come to see their own norms as correct and the norms of others as incorrect. Same goes for beliefs. That basic complex that you may want to associate originally with ethnicity, you can also gin it up with other kinds of categories, in particular political categories, because in complex societies like ours, when you have different kinds of groups adhering to particular ideas about the correct way to organize social life, which is what politics is all about, isn't it? Once you start strengthening these identities and these views about what's correct, what's incorrect, what's desirable, what's undesirable, if they gel to a certain extent where people stop talking to each other across the boundary, then it starts to become more and more natural for people, so recruiting this whole cognitive mechanism that harks back to the origins of ethnicity. It becomes easier and easier for people to start almost essentializing people on the other side the way they do with ethnic groups, and to start thinking of the people on the other side as bad people. You know, they're bad people because they have they do things incorrectly, they have the wrong ideas and so forth, so they must have a bad essence. You can't really help them, you can't talk to them, you can't negotiate with them. All these things becomes a kind of a tribal complex.
I want to interrupt you for a minute, because we're not really talking about two different ethnicities. We're talking about one nation that is splitting because of, I believe, their value system are so diametrically opposed. It's not even just something of loyalty. It's of their value system.
Well, yes, but you see the cognitive mechanisms that are recruited for this do come from the world of ethnicity. So two different ethnic groups, what they have is precisely that. They have different value systems. They value different things. They think certain things are right and desirable, and other things are undesirable and incorrect or bad, right? So that's precisely what differentiates ethnicities, is that they have different value systems. When you cross the ethnic barrier, you're moving from one community of people who have certain notions of what is good and bad, and what is desirable and undesirable, to a different equilibrium of those things, where they see things differently, right? And so this is the reason that racist entrepreneurs have such an easy time of it, because the way we naturally think about ethnic boundaries is already, we already tend to put these valuations, positive valuations, on the things we believe and the things we tend to do and normatively approve of, and the negative valuations on the things that people outside of our ethnic group believe and the things they value and the things they normatively approve of.
So okay, so apply all of this now to what's happening in America.
Right. So when you move along a particular path in politics where you are socialized more and more to think of people who disagree with you as bad people, not just people who have a different way of looking at things. That would be the cosmopolitan way of participating in politics. But if you start essentializing them as bad people, then it becomes harder and harder to have communication across the political boundary that divides two political identities. And certain kinds of certain beliefs in particular start to act as markers of membership and of correct thinking, so that the opposite idea becomes a taboo. Something that you cannot express or believe if you are a member of one of these particular political groups, right? So the expression of certain ideas or beliefs starts to become a litmus test of true membership in the group that you're supposed to belong in. And the members of that group start using the expression of those ideas and the requirement that you express them publicly, they start using that as a kind of a flag, as a kind of demonstration that you are a good person and one of us instead of one of them. And if you don't do this properly, then you become a traitor to the group you're in. And these things are policed. So you are constantly being pressured not to become a traitor and therefore to constantly publicly express certain ideas deemed to be correct. And this pressure produces more and more homogeneity within your group, within each group, and starts to exaggerate the differences between the groups. And it starts to look a lot like racism. It starts to look a lot like ethnic prejudice. You start to get this more and more tribal behavior going on. And this is what I think has been happening to the United States over the last 50 years. So there's been a socialization process. Eric Weinstein calls this, he calls the two major groups, he calls them Wokistan and Magistan. That's how he labels them now.
All right. And, so you know, this is kind of getting very cerebral. Cerebral for our listeners. Translate it into the streets now, and what's happening and what needs to be done.
Okay, so what's happening in the streets now is that people from these two quasi-nations that have been developing in the United States, the if you want to call it the Wokistan or the rather extreme left, and Magistan or the people on the right who can't stand the woke people, they see themselves more and more as the way people who belong to ethnic groups in conflict tend to see each other, you know, as people who cannot be helped, people who cannot be reasoned with, and so forth. And the worldviews that each group has, each of them sees them as completely correct and good and noble and the right way to be. They can't imagine that the other side has anything to offer or anything worth listening to or anything good and so forth. And the more this tribal perspective develops, the harder it is to negotiate anything in the space between.
Okay, but we have a case where it's not each side thinks that the other one doesn't understand it or has nothing worth listening to. We have where one side, I see it at least, this is how I see it. One side is very cocky, feels like they have a lot of power, and can now silence the other side doesn't even have to listen to them, let alone think of them in any certain way. They just nullify them.
Yes. Well, that one group has more power than the other. I think I agree with that. But I think that the process I'm describing affects. I think I would agree with you that it's worse on the left. I think that I would agree with that. But I think it's happening on both sides. There is a mutual reinforcement process going on. So and we've talked about this on a different show, you and I, how racist the left has become. So they've got this anti-white ideology going on. You know, there's books like White Fragility becoming bestsellers that basically say that white people are bad because they're white. But the effect that has on the other side is that it fuels the growth of white supremacism, right? So if you're telling all white people that they're all racists because they're white, you know, well, a lot of white people are going to be like, they're going to be so offended that, or some white people anyway, maybe not a lot, but some white people are going to be so offended that it makes the arguments of white supremacists attractive. And so a dynamic is set up where the clashes between these two extremes start feeding the growth of extremist movements on both sides. And the more they develop this essentialized view of the other side, the harder it is to talk and the easier it is to demonize. And you start getting these clashes that are, yes, moving us closer and closer to a civil war. Because civil war happens when you decide that the other side is evil and that you can't talk to the other side anymore.
I think that America's already there. I think so.
Yeah, well, this is what we're describing. Now, I think, however, that we have to be careful about saying that America is already there, because I also believe that the loud extremes are getting a lot of attention in the media. And I think the reasonable people in between are probably a larger population. So a lot has been there's been a lot of discussion lately about how Twitter, for example, skews our perception of the world, because the people who participate in Twitter are actually a small fraction of the population.
Okay, hold that thought, because we have to go to another break again. We're speaking with Professor Francisco Gil White. Everybody, don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
Narratives to Divide America. You're listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and our guest is Professor Francisco Gil White. And he's talking about what's happening today in America, the division between the Democrats and the conservatives, the communists, the left, and the right and conservative. And it's very sad to see what's happening in America today. Even talk of a civil war is frightening, let alone actually seeing people being hurt in the streets. So with all that you've taught us these last two segments, in the last 10 minutes of the show that we have, what do we need to do? What do we need to learn, and what do we need to do?
Well, I was telling you that I don't think that the people who cannot speak across the divide are the majority. I think those people are in the minority, but they get a lot of play in the media, partly because of the new structure of communication. So Twitter, for example, it's a small minority of people who participate on Twitter, and the crazies are a small minority of those. But they are amplified by the news media. So the news media pays an enormous amount of attention to what happens on Twitter, as if Twitter were representative of the overall feeling of what's going on in the rest of the country.
Yeah, but they censored the president of the United States. That was his main way how to communicate directly with the people. We're talking about the supposedly most powerful man in the world. If they can do it to him, they can do it to anybody, and they are doing it to the anybodies as well.
Yes, but I was making a different point. The point I was making was that there are certain political views expressed on Twitter that get projected by the media as if they were representative of a much bigger chunk of the United States than they in fact are. And so the way the conversation is structured ever since these social media companies became dominant is that a small number of people who are very loud on these social media platforms get augmented, amplified in such a way that people get the impression that they're speaking for a giant segment of the U.S. population when they really aren't. So I think there's an enormous silent majority in the United States that is still quite reasonable, that doesn't agree with either extreme, but there's a kind of a created reality where that is hard to see because the contact that we have with the world is always mediated. We don't witness anything. Our entire model of what's going on in the world comes to us through the media, one way or another. And so because the media has been doing this amplification of what happens in Twitter and Facebook and so forth, we are getting a very skewed picture of the world. I think that most Americans don't want a civil war. I think most Americans can still talk to each other. But the people who can't talk to each other, these extreme tribes, are being sort of amplified and represented as representative of a much bigger chunk of America than they really are. So, and I think it's important to pay attention to the historical process, because this skewing of the things on the left, this tribe of the left that has become so worrisome and that we have seen rioting all over the United States in 2020, that thing was created. It was created through the universities. It's been a process of 50 years. I mean, as long as I've been alive, this has been going on. And I saw it myself evolve in the U.S. university when I was in it. Jonathan Haidt has been a very careful chronicler of this whole process. The movement of professors towards the left has been constant. So if you want to see it as a hiring process, they've been hiring professors who are more and more left as the years have gone by, and that has been skewing the way they educate the students, right? And as the sort of political orientation, the left skew in the social sciences and the humanities has become more and more extreme, and because these people become more and more homogenous, there's fewer people that are different from them to talk to inside the university. That has created a stronger gravity towards thinking that the views they hold are not merely their own preferences, but that they are somehow, that they've discovered what is good, they've discovered what is right, they've discovered that they're right-thinking people, and then people who disagree with them are wrong-thinking people who must be fundamentally evil, right? This way of thinking and talking has become stronger and stronger inside the university and the people educated by it, because it's so important to signal that you are a right-thinking person by expressing in public certain ideas, certain beliefs, and so forth. The expression of those ideas in those circles has become obligatory as a kind of a litmus test that you do belong to the right-thinking group. And the idea that you would express contrary ideas or that you would take seriously or even listen to what the opposite side is saying, that gets you tagged as a traitor. And what I've been trying to convey in today's program is that this is precisely the kind of tribal thinking that ethnic groups in conflict engage in. And when this happens, ethnic conflict becomes very bloody. This is when you get the worst kinds of civil wars. Now, I'm not saying that these groups are actual ethnic groups, but they do look like them more and more. I mean, if you look at, for example, marriage patterns, it's not very common for people who vote Democratic to marry people who vote Republican. That is not very common. So even in the marriage decisions, they behave more and more like ethnic groups, right? And this means that there's less and less communication between them, and this process of essentializing the membership in the group as evidence of your inner good nature, you know, membership in your group and membership in the opposite group as evidence of the inner bad nature, you know, that this way of thinking, this way of expressing is becoming more and more common. And it is something that we need to put on the table explicitly, as I'm trying to do now, so that people can see how they're being captured by these ways of thinking that moralize absolutely everything they do and make it impossible to have an open mind towards what the other side is saying, because that would immediately get you tagged as a traitor from the people in your own group.
Okay, so right? In the 2 minutes that we have left, how does America climb out of this abyss?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that one way for Americans to climb out of this would be for a massive educational program to explain to them how the media has manipulated them into these positions.
Because yeah, but that's not going to happen because the media is working together with the left. So how else? We need an immediate inoculation, not something that's going to go, you know, through education that takes years. How now? I mean, America is, they're already talking about a civil war. Not that there's going to be one, but they're talking about it. That's already a very bad situation. How do they get out of this?
I didn't mean to suggest that the media would do this tomorrow. Obviously, this educational project is not something the media is going to engage in, but we need to do it, right? So people and organizations and channels that are not traditional media need to make a very strong effort to explain to ordinary people how they are manipulated by the media and by the educational establishment. I mean, the universities are completely broken.
But who's going to be able to teach that when that side's being silenced?
Well, this is a good question. I'm sorry to say that I don't have all the answers, but what is needed is the creation of channels of communication. And I think the internet is a tool that can be used. I mean, you're using it. We're on the internet right now. But there needs to be serious funding by people who have money and who are interested in opposing this trend. And they need to, or we need to, organize a widespread educational campaign so that people can become aware of the forces that have been manipulating them.
I think that we need to train pigeons so we can continue to communicate with each other and send each other messages through pigeons if we get banned from all of these other platforms that we can't communicate. You know, it's just crazy. No, I just want to say it's just crazy that the people who were kicked off Twitter or who wanted to be able to continue to talk with people went to a different platform called Parler, and then when they couldn't silence people on the mainstream platforms, they had to go and take out the alternative platforms like Parler. So there's no place for anybody to talk. But we have to leave it there. Professor Francisco Gil White, very interesting what you had to say, to see how societies split and clans form and beliefs form. And I hope America can, as I said, climb out of this abyss. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tamar.
And if you want 10 seconds, really quick. Five seconds.
Well, 10 seconds just to say that we need to move entirely out of the big tech ecosystem. So Parler was on Amazon. Amazon is part of the big tech ecosystem. So we need somebody else to own the server. That's the thing.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us. And thank you all for listening.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.